Chapter 2. House of Dreams. For half an hour, as the evening became dark around them, Percy and John rode in the back of the small cart. Then suddenly, the silent driver at the front of the cart hailed someone ahead of them in the gloom. In response to his cry, a bright light shone on them out of the dark. As they came closer, John saw that the light came from a massive car, the largest and most magnificent that he had ever seen. It was made of rich, shining metal and decorated with beautiful patterns of green and yellow jewels. Two servants, dressed in sparkling uniforms like those worn by royal guards in London, were standing at attention beside the car, and as the two young men stepped out of the cart, they were greeted in a language which John could not understand. "Get in," said Percy to his friend, as their trunks were thrown onto the roof of the car. "Sorry we had to bring you this far in that cart, but of course we couldn't let the people in the train or in that pitiful town see this car." "Gosh, what a car!" cried John. He saw that the large and incredibly soft seats were covered with gold cloth, which had tiny and beautiful patterns sewn in with jewels and fine silk. "What a car!" cried John again in amazement. "This thing?" Percy laughed. "It's just an old piece of junk." By this time, they were gliding along toward the break between the two mountains. "We'll be there in an hour and a half," said Percy, looking at the clock. "I may as well tell you it's not going to be like anything you've ever seen before." If the car was any indication of what John would see, he was prepared to be astonished indeed. The most important of the simple values of Hades was the worship of wealth. John's parents would have been upset if he had not respected Percy more for being rich. They had now reached the break between the two mountains that John and Percy had seen from the train, and almost immediately the way became much rougher. "If the moon shone down here, you'd see that we're in a deep valley," said Percy, trying to look out of the window. He said a few words into a machine, and immediately the driver's assistant turned on a light and shone it on the cliffs rising up. "It's rocky. An ordinary car would break down in half an hour. In fact, it'd take a tank to navigate it unless you knew the way." The car was now climbing a hill, and within a few minutes they were on a high rise where they could see a pale moon in the distance. The car stopped suddenly, and John could barely see that there were several servants in the dark outside the car, who again spoke the same strange language. Then the servants set to work, and four massive cables were attached with hooks to the large jeweled wheels. The workers shouted, "Hey-ya!" and John felt the car being lifted slowly from the ground, up and up, over the tallest rocks on both sides, then higher, until he could see a valley in the moon's pale light. They had passed over a huge rock rising far into the air, and now they were going down again. Finally, with a soft bump, they landed on the smooth earth. "The worst is over," said Percy, looking out the window. "It's only 5 miles from here, on our private road made of brick. This belongs to us. This is where the United States ends, Father says."
"Are we in Canada?"
"We are not. We are in the middle of the Montana Rockies. But you are now on the only 5 square miles of land in the country that's never been surveyed."
"Why hasn't it? Did they forget it?"
"No," said Percy, grinning. "They tried to do it 3 times. The first time, my grandfather changed a whole government survey. The second time, he had the official maps of the United States changed. That held them for 15 years. The last time was harder. My father set up a powerful magnetic field so that their compasses wouldn't work, and secretly replaced their instruments with ones that were modified so that this territory did not appear. Then he changed the river's path, and he set up a fake village on its banks so that they'd see it and think it was a town 10 miles farther up the valley. There's only one thing my father's afraid of," he concluded. "Only one thing in the world that could be used to find us."
"What's that?"
Percy sank his voice to a whisper.
"Airplanes," he whispered. We've got half a dozen special army guns to use against them, and it's been okay so far. But there have been a few deaths and a lot of prisoners. My father and I don't mind, but it upsets Mother and the girls. Small, fast-moving clouds were flying across the moon like strange gases from mysterious foreign countries. John shook his head and laughed nervously. He imagined a beautiful summer's day with young men flying above him in the sky, dropping medicine and supplies to the poor villages below. He could imagine them suddenly staring in amazement at the guns appearing out of nowhere far below. He pictured their shock as the airplanes were hit by shells, catching fire and falling to the earth. Percy said that these innocent pilots being shot down were upsetting to his mother and sisters, but didn't bother him or his father. What terrible mystery lay hidden here? They rounded a calm lake, passed into a dark pine grove, cool and sweet-smelling, then came out upon a broad lawn. John could not hold in an amazed, "Oh!" Just as Percy said, "We're home." Lit up by the moon, a beautiful castle half the height of the mountain beside it stood by the lake and faded into the pine forest. It was a perfect and incredible building, like nothing John had ever seen or imagined before. High towers seemed to touch the sky, stairs swept gracefully around the wonderful curves of the building, and lights of all colors shone out of thousands of perfect windows of different shapes and sizes. The beauty of the palace, with its massive size and perfect construction, felt to John like an extraordinary piece of music. And indeed, as John gazed up in amazement, the sound of music more beautiful than any he had ever heard drifted down from the top of a brightly lit tower. Without making a sound, the car floated to the grand entrance. The air around John was sweet with the smell of flowers. At the top of a massive set of stone steps, two great doors swung open without a sound, and warm light flooded out into the dark, showing the outline of a perfect lady with her black hair piled high, who held out her arms toward them. "Mother," Percy was saying, "this is my friend John Unger from Hades." Later, John remembered that first night as a dream of many colors overwhelming his senses, of soft music, and of the beauty of things, lights and shadows, and motions and faces. There was a perfectly dressed white-haired man who stood drinking a colorful drink from a crystal glass set on a gold plate in a warmly lit room. There was a girl with a flowery face dressed like a goddess with jewels in her hair. There was a room where the solid, soft gold of the walls moved when he touched it, and an astonishing room where every surface was lined with an unbroken mass of diamonds of every size and shape. It was lit in the corners with tall, strange lights that reflected off the diamonds in a perfect color that was whiter than white, brighter than bright, more amazing than anything a human being could wish for or dream of. The two boys wandered through an endless number of these rooms. Sometimes the floor under their feet would shine in brilliant patterns from the lighting below. Sometimes, beneath layers of thick crystal, he would see blue or green water flowing, inhabited by colorful fish and plants. Then they would be treading on furs of every color or along hallways of ivory, unbroken as if it were carved from the enormous tusks of elephants bigger than existed in the world. Then, though he couldn't remember how he got there, John found he was eating dinner, where each plate was made of two layers of solid diamond with a thin layer of jewels in between. Music drifted down through the hallways, and his chair, curved perfectly to fit his back, seemed to swallow him as he drank his first glass of port. He tried sleepily to answer a question that had been asked him, but the amazing comfort overwhelming his body pushed him further towards sleep. Jewels, silk, wines, and metals danced before his eyes in a sweet fog. "Yes," he replied with polite effort. "It certainly is hot in Hades." Then, without movement, without resistance, he floated off into sleep. When he awoke, he knew that several hours had passed. He was in a large, quiet room with creamy walls and a dull light. His young host was standing over him. You fell asleep at dinner, Percy was saying. I nearly did too. It was such a treat to be comfortable again after this year of school. The helpers bathed you while you were sleeping. Is this a bed or a cloud? Sighed John. Percy, before you go, I want to say sorry.
For what?
For doubting you when you said you had a diamond as big as the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. Percy smiled. I thought you didn't believe me. It's that mountain, you know.
What mountain?
The mountain the castle rests on. It's not very big for a mountain, but except for about 50 feet of soil and gravel on top, it's solid diamond. One diamond, 1 cubic mile. Aren't you listening? But John T. Unger had again fallen asleep.